and welcome to the Diz Dads Podcast Midweek Destinations and Diversions Show. It's the Dad Show, your hump day Disney vacation fix for Wednesday, June 28th, 2017. The Dad Show is brought to you by Kingdom Strollers. Kingdom Strollers is Orlando's premium stroller and crib rental vendor. Why pay more for a less comfortable, less versatile stroller in the theme parks? Make your reservation at kingdomstrollers.com. You'll pay less for the rental, and they'll deliver the stroller of your choice to your resort and pick it up from the resort at the end of your vacation for free. Kingdom Strollers, your first choice for Orlando's stroller rentals. And an authorized Walt Disney World stroller vendor. Today on the Dad Show, Jason Mitz is back, this time to talk about a whole family vacation and lots of sort of different stuff happening this time, right, Jason? We've got a split stay, an extended vacation. This isn't a long weekend. It's a full 10 days over Memorial Day weekend. Lots of new and exciting stuff happening.
Yeah, we had not only my family, but also my sister-in-law and her two kids were also down for the first part of the vacation. So we really had a lot of cool stuff going on.
Wow. All right. So a longer trip, extended family, all kinds of stuff. So let's start with the planning stages of the vacation like we always do. And, you know, we had mentioned, I think, when we talked back a few weeks ago about your adults-only trip, that you knew when you took that adults-only trip that you had this whole family trip, you know, coming up next. So kind of how far out did this family trip start coming together? And was it always this mix of, you know, extended family for part of the trip and then continuing on yourself? Or did that change somewhere along the way in the planning process?
Well, we started planning probably last August. And we surprised the kids with this trip at Christmas time. And so, you know, we knew that we were going to get annual passes. So that was part of our decision, or it helped influence our decision to get annual passes, that we were going to be there for the marathon weekend in January for my wife and I. But then we also had this trip, like you'd said. And it got to be around March when we got back and we started talking with my wife's sister and her two kids, and they've got a kindergartner and a third grader, and that really ignited their fire because they'd been down there with us several times in the past. And so next thing you know, we're making the big campfire planning trips and using social media to get our messages back and forth for fast passes and getting our My Disney experiences linked up.
Okay. So all in then, you've got a group of what, 10 or 12?
Just seven.
Oh, just seven.
Yeah.
Okay. So seven, so it's a good sized group, but a little more manageable, not the sort of, you know, huge extended group you've had before. And you said that the first 5 days were the part that you had with everybody together. And for that part, you were staying at Pop Century, right?
Yep. You were staying at Pop Century in the 50s building.
Okay. So talk a little bit about Pop. Had you stayed there recently?
We'd stayed there probably 3 years ago. And at this point, the rooms have not been refurbished in the section that we were staying at in the 50s. But we also did not have a preferred room location this time. You know, where the bowling pin pool is, we were at the building right behind the jukebox, the giant jukebox, but on the far side.
Okay.
And So
pretty much the back of the resort.
Yeah, for most intents and purposes, but also the quiet part of the resort.
That's true too.
My sister-in-law and her kids were on the first floor, and we were on the third floor, and it was just as good as always.
Okay, good. And you're a family of three, is that right, or four?
Four. Yep.
Okay, so you're a family of four. What's your sense of the space at Pop Century. Now, I know that's kind of in transition now. You were still there in the double bed days, and the word is out now that, you know, as the renovation at Pop Century progresses, those double beds are being replaced by queen beds. But you guys still good with the double bed accommodations? It still works for you?
No, not at all. this fall, I'll have a senior in high school and a eighth grader and my daughters, and the two twin beds did not work very well. Thank goodness that it was the beginning of the trip, and you know, we're still really hyper motivated to, you know, we're at Disney and we're just running on adrenaline. But at night, my youngest daughter did find a way to use some creative clothing to kind of make her own little bed against the wall, because they just couldn't be in that double bed together.
Yeah, I completely understand there. And that's why, as soon as you said you were staying at Pop, I started to wonder, you know, how that was going to work. Because I know that the last time we did it, my kids were younger than yours are now. And that's kind of when we decided this just isn't going to work anymore.
Yeah. Two teenage girls and my wife and one little bathroom. I'm going to take no for a thousand there, Alex. It's that is terrible.
Yeah, I think that, you know, is it accurate to say that that's probably the last, you know, at least non-queen size bed value stay for the Mitz family?
If I'm taking all four of us down there, you're damn right.
All right. So aside from, you know, it being a little tight in the room, talk a little bit. I mean, I think it may probably make sense to talk about the trip in two pieces. So we've got this first piece, which is the you know, part that includes the extended family element to it. So what were the priorities for that part of the trip? Because I assume there were some things that you just wanted to make sure that you did while the little cousins were there.
Yeah, absolutely. My nephew got into the Jedi training at Hollywood Studios, and we got to go through the launch bay and meet Chewbacca and Kylo Ren and BB-8, and the First Order troopers are cruising through there, and they are very interactive with guests, and it's hilarious, and it's really, really enjoyable for Hollywood Studios being torn up right now as it is. If you've got Star Wars fans, it at least acts as kind of a Band-Aid until they get things up and going.
Right. Yeah. I think I've commented before that I think that they're doing a pretty good job, at least, in, you know, pulling out the stops on sort of extra entertainment pieces that they can kind of pop up here and there to, you know, fill in for the fact that, you know, so much of the property is kind of closed or walled off due to the construction.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would say about Hollywood Studios as well, when we were there, their nighttime, the Star Wars fireworks were not going on. They had this new kind of a Hollywood movie projection show with laser lights and fireworks that we watched. And I didn't know much about it, and maybe I was a little off the...
No, nobody knew about it. That was just it. Actually, it was really, really kind of funny. Because you know that everything at Walt Disney World sort of leaks these days.
And yeah. Then,
you know, word gets out. Well, nobody knew this one was coming. It just popped up. And you must have just kind of hit the transition period, because I guess what they did was, you know, they decided to take that stage and replace it with just different equipment for the most part, because they wanted equipment that could be put up and taken down more readily.
Mm-hmm.
So there was about a week there where they were transitioning. They pulled out the old stage stuff and they were transitioning to the new. And so they didn't do Galactic Spectacular for about a week, but they did go ahead and introduce this new show. And now they're doing the Hollywood show that you saw sort of as a pre-show to Galactic Spectacular.
Ah, okay. Well, it's really cool. I mean, it's really good. It's I think it will fit into the theming. Well, however that turns out, with Star Wars and Pixar and the Hollywood theme of the park is, you know, still, so, you know, it will work.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I'm sure that in your context, it was a little disappointing that that was the show you got, because it really is, I think, a little more along the lines of you know, what was the kind of pre-show projection show at the Magic Kingdom, you know, before the new fireworks show debuted there. It's probably more along the lines of that than a true full-blown fireworks display.
Yeah, it really was a lot more of what I noticed. Well, when it started, I was like, well, this isn't Star Wars at all. And you know, I knew it was different because we'd seen it before.
Right. Yeah.
And it was just Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 stuff, you know, a lot. And I was like, oh, well, this is pretty cool. So we'll watch it. And we did. And it's enjoyable.
Okay. Well, you know, it's not what you expected, but at least it was value, you know, of value. It was a decent show to watch.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I know you've done Launch Bay before, but there were a couple of new pieces. So I guess BB-8 was the biggest of the new pieces. What did you think of the BB-8 meet and greet? What's it like meeting a robot?
It's pretty underwhelming. BB-8, his head spins, but it does not flow around the top of the main orb. You know, and there is some interaction with his chirping, and he does have some pitched phrases, if you will. But, you know, it's not nearly as enjoyable as meeting Chewbacca or Kylo Ren.
Sure. Yeah, I get that. I was curious because I know I've got a couple of folks that I know who are heading down who are really excited to meet BB-8, and I'm trying to temper expectations a little bit because at the bottom of it, it's still, you know, an animatronic and not even like a next-gen animatronic. It's a fairly basic animatronic ultimately. It looks pretty good, but it's not BB-8, right? Yeah, it doesn't roll.
It's not the BB-8 from the stage show that they did where it came out and rolled around and did, you know, that type of thing. This is more of a puppet, if you will.
Right. Okay, so that's Hollywood Studios, and it sounds like that was a great start to your vacation. What other priorities did you have for things that you knew you wanted to do, you know, while you had the younger relatives around?
Oh, we made sure that our fast passes, you know, at like say at Magic Kingdom, you know, you hit the big stuff, you know, the Splash Mountain and Pirates and Splash Mountain, Big Thunder Railroad, Seven Dwarfs Mine Train, all of those types of things was imperative to get the kids onto those, and we were able to knock all of that stuff out over, you know, a couple 3 days, and we were able to get some decent reservation. Like we got lunch at Be Our Guest, and the kids were really happy to get into the castle and you know, it's things like that.
Sure. And any dining that you did that was, you know, specially done in the first part of the trip so that the younger kids would be included?
Oh, just beer garden. Beer garden is
right because you got to get the little ones their beer.
Well, to my folks, I'm a little one, so and I had to have my beer. It's just a sentimental, you know, the kids had been there before when they were really little and they don't remember that trip, but you know, to get them back there with us, which is always a must do within the first day or two, you know, you just check that off of your Disney must do list for us. And the show, you know, is great as always, and the kids really enjoyed it and clapped and you could tell that they were really into it, which, you know, for little kids, that's pretty important for a meal like that where we've been sitting for a little while, and it was just a lot of fun.
Okay. So anything else, and I'm just trying to kind of wrap up this first piece a little bit. Anything else about those first 5 days while you were at Pop with the rest of the extended family that, you know, stood out about the trip overall?
We did get into into Pandora. We had fast passes for the Flight of Passage attraction.
Oh, okay. And, love to hear about this.
So here's the, it's kind of hard to, because we wrote it twice, but the first time we had fast passes. So we show up for our fast passes and you still had about a 20-minute wait and you get into the queue line and, you know, they ask for how many people are in your party. And then you go into this room that has this really long explanation as to what they're going to do as for the ride, that you're going to have an avatar. You're not actually going to be riding the Banshee. You're going to be linked to someone who's already on a Banshee. Okay. And okay. So there's numbers on the floor and you stand there and they have like this kind of a weird show from a scientist who's trying to explain to what's going on and how they discovered about the Banshees and this type of thing. And then you have to kind of stand there and move around on cue. And there's a screen where it's like a motion capture screen that helps you link to your avatar. And then,
right. Okay. And so then, they're really going all in here in the queue as you're, you know, getting up to the attraction. They're really, you know, pulling you into at least the conceit of the Avatar film here, right? This is the element where they're trying to leverage the story element of the film to the extent that they are going to.
Yeah. It's a more direct, a direct shot at it compared to when you go through the standby line, and it's a much more we can talk about that here in a little bit. It's a little, just a little
okay.
bit different.
Okay.
But sure. But then when you're in the, you've already been selected and you're standing on a number on the floor, okay? It's like let's say I'm number 4 or whatever, and there's like 12 of you. And then you go in and they give you your goggles and they talk about the ride, and there's a few warnings because, you know, if you get motion sick or if you're claustrophobic or, you know, this type of thing, or if you have little kids with you, which we did. And they explain to you when you go into the room that there's like these little shelving behind you. You put your backpack or your cell phone or your baseball hat and this type of thing back there, and it's right behind you when you get done at the attraction. And then you go in to the room that has the contraption that you sit on. I'm not sure what the correct term for it is, but your robotic Banshee.
The ride vehicle, whatever
yeah.
it may be.
Yeah. And you find your number on the floor and you put your things on there and then you go sit on the Banshee. Now, that's all easy and sounds great. Now, this is the first time we've done this. Okay. The ride hasn't hardly been open a day, and I'm sitting on my Banshee and I look over and I've got my 5-year-old nephew, my 8-year-old niece, and a wall. And their mother is in the other room. So we are now separated. Okay.
Oh my, and you're right on the end with all the kids.
Yeah, and I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know what this thing even is. I seriously, I have no idea what's going to happen. This thing could go upside down and we could all throw up. I have no idea.
Had you ever even seen the movie?
No.
So you have no clue at all what's going on.
None whatsoever. So, and I look over to my nephew Royce. I'm like, this is going to be awesome. And my heart's beating a mile a minute because I have no idea what's going to happen. Well, then the thing starts locking you in, like the back plate comes in, and there's these pieces that come around your calves because it's almost like you're riding a motorcycle that's very aggressively positioned. Okay. Like a ninja or a crotch rocket motorcycle, this type of thing. And the handles are way out front. And it takes a couple of seconds, and it's like a special effects thing where you're finishing up the DNA link or whatever with your avatar. And then the thing starts, and out of nowhere, there's a wall right in front of you, and it just disappears because there's like these bright sparkly lights or whatever as you go through the tunnel of linking with your avatar, and all of a sudden you are on a Banshee way up in the sky, like on a perch or whatever.
Okay, and you're like launched right into the middle of the world.
Yeah, basically. Yeah, you're way up in the sky, and you can feel the thing breathing like it pushes your legs apart and whatever. And it's beautiful. And you've got your 3D glasses or whatever, and it's just amazingly beautiful. And then the cast member, when we were loading up, says the first jump, the first little bit is going to determine whether or not the kids like it or not. So be careful, you know, be ready. And if you need help, I we'll be watching you. And I'm thinking, well, what the hell do you mean by that? You know, cause now I'm nervous as to what's going to go on here. Well, right off the bat, this thing goes into a nosedive. The Banshee, like you can feel it jump up off the perch and it nosedives straight down. And it's awesome. I mean, you can feel the wind in your face, you know, because it's like a 4D attraction. And you go through the ride and there's, it skims along the water and it sprays you with mist and you can smell the fruit and the vegetation of the planet. And there must be, I bet, 6 or 7 big power dives that the animal does as you're riding the ride through it. And I'm looking over and the kids are just wide-eyed and they're loving it. I mean, they're just absolutely loving it and cheering the thing on. And it is an amazing attraction. It really is. And when it comes to an end, you know, the bright lights come back up, the wall in front of you reappears, and the attraction lets you out of the off of your animal, if you will. And the kids were just going crazy as how awesome. Hell, I was too. It is amazing.
All right. So high praise for the Flight of Passage. And were the kids, I mean, you said they were cheering at the end, so it was intense, but, you know, not too intense even for the kids that were kind of right on the edge of tall enough.
Yeah, not at all. They both were digging it. A little boy and a little girl right on the edge of almost being too little to ride it, but nope. They were anxious to try and ride it again as soon as possible.
Now, any comments or concerns or thoughts about the restraint system? Because we've heard some complaints about it from some other folks.
You know, no. And, you know, they have a model out front before you can even get in line for you to try out. And I think I'm a medium build adult male. It wasn't uncomfortable. I didn't have any problems. As long as you sit comfortably as they instruct you, it's not restrictive. It's not uncomfortable at all.
Good, good. So talk to me about Pandora in general, you know, on top of or aside from Flights of Passage. Although I guess before we get too far ahead, you wanted to mention some differences about the standby approach versus the FastPass approach.
Yeah, sure. The FastPass approach, you come up through the outdoor queue, which is like you're going up through the mountainside, but then it takes you almost immediately into like the testing facility. Like it almost looks like a military base, if you will. And you come up through these long hallways and then you're at the you know, how many are in your party and you get in line. Okay. But we went back and did it in the standby line. And that was 2 hours and 20 minutes to wait. That curls around outside for an hour. And there is a lot of fans that are perched up above. And they look to have like refrigerator coils behind them, like they could blow like cool mist or something.
Okay.
Which really came in really handy. And then you get inside and you go through about 5 or 6 different set pieces for another hour. You start off in this cave where the Na'vi have kind of cave drawings or that type of art all over as you wind through there. And then there is you can tell that you're getting into a testing facility, and there's a lot of barbed wire, if you will, and netting and kind of a landslide of rock. And you get inside to another inside the military base part of it. And then you're in the laboratory that has the giant blue Na'vi in the tube. But I'm sure you've seen the video of that. It floats around and it moves
like
it's dreaming. And then there's like this active laboratory, if you will, of different experiments that they're doing for the environment. And a lot of it is magnet and liquid magnet based. Like you remember, like when you're maybe a kid, they had like this thing you got like at the dime store that had like a man with looked like a clown, and then it had like all these little metal filings in there.
And the one where you made the like beard and mustache,
yes,
and hair
exactly like
with,
that
with the filings. Yeah,
they have these experiments in there that are almost. That's more of a liquid than those metal shavings, but it makes all kinds of shapes. And that the experiment that they have is, you know, it's fictional, but it's how it's supposed to attack harmful bacteria or harmful enzymes and help, you know, keep people healthy on the planet. And the test subject or the they have like these tubes, sort of like what the facehuggers were in Alien, but it's got this viscous liquid that changes shape in it and does all kinds of neat tricks while you're going through the line. It's really impressive. And that's the last stage. Technically, you get into one more flight line, that has like a big monitor, almost very similar to like Star Tours, where they have like the different flights when they're leaving. This has more of a tracker of where different Banshees are with different pilots and their statistics and things like that, and sort of a radar of the planet surface. And then you go into the line to be, you know, how many are in your party, that type of line. But it's impressive, but the lines were super long when we were there, a projected 4.5 or more at some stages.
Okay, cool. Yeah. So they really have gone an extra mile to make that queue really interactive. And it's a little surprising to me that it's the FastPass queue that has gotten this more sort of interactive treatment.
No, this was all standby.
Oh, that's the standby.
Yeah, that's all standby.
Okay, good. Okay, that makes much more sense now.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, the FastPass, you go through the military hallways or whatever.
Okay, and they move you through there pretty quick,
yeah,
so
yep.
There's not an opportunity. Okay.
Yeah.
I get it. So it sounds like it's almost worth it at least once to go through the standby line, you know, as long as it's not in the 400-minute range.
Yeah.
otherwise, it might be worth it to go through that standby line, even if it's a bit of a wait, just because there's some cool stuff there to experience.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think it's worth your time.
All right. So that's Flight of Passage. Let's talk about some of the rest of Pandora. Did you spend, some good amount of time there? I mean, I know it was probably pretty crowded because it was opening weekend there.
Yeah. This is one of the neat things about it. When you leave the attraction for the Flight of Passage, it's the only time they have cast members that funnel you away from the gift shop. You don't exit into a gift shop, believe it or not. Because these toy Banshees that they had that sit on your shoulder and have like a little cable,
right.
There was about a 30-minute wait to get in there out front. So you didn't come in the back of the gift shop. They funneled you out and around out into the main part of Pandora again. And then if you wanted to go in there, you had to wait in line to enter the gift shop.
Now, let me ask you this, though. Did you get the impression that the normal way of doing things will be to route people through the gift shop, and this was just sort of an exception?
Yep, okay. Because the second time we went through it, the second time we went to the standby line, they'd sold out of the Banshees, so they let you go right into the gift shop at the bottom of the
queue. There you go.
Yeah. So, yep. And they still had other cool, you know, merchandise in there because it was opening weekend and stuff, but it wasn't anything to trip my trigger.
Okay. So that's the store and Flight of Passage. Did you check out the River Journey?
We did. We did that standby. We weren't able to get fast passes for that. And we waited in line for that for, probably about an hour and 40 minutes. Most of the queue line for that is actually outside. But there is a section of it that is covered by like a thicket. It looks like it's a sticks and nest over the top of it to keep you out of the sun.
Right, the thatch kind of stuff.
Yeah, yep. And a lot of fans. Both queue lines did have drinking stations about halfway through with cold ice, cold water, and a station to fill up water bottles and things like that, along with drinking fountains. But the river one was really underwhelming. It's a beautiful ride. It's Pandora at night, and the use of the technology that they use for projections on screens and things, it gives this very realistic look to animals that aren't animatronic. They are projected, but it looks like they are right there. It is just a beautiful neon experience. And then there's the shaman who is singing at the end, and it's really neat, but I have no emotional attachment to that ride whatsoever. Okay.
Sure. And right. Because you'd never seen the movie. You have no connection to the story. You have no emotional connection to these people or
right.
this shaman or what he's.
Right. But the thing is, I've since seen the movie, and it still doesn't really do anything for me. And the ride's only like 4.5 minutes long.
Okay.
I mean, it's, Aaron, it's short. Yeah. And you see the shaman and you go around one more bend and it's time to get out of the boat. I mean, it's, when we got out of it, you know, we're all kind of like, it's, you know, it's pretty. I mean, really, the use of the technology with lighting and everything is beautiful. But I said, we just waited a long time for a, you know, very, very, very short attraction. I said, I don't think I would ever do that again, even if I had fast pass access to it. You know, that's just my take on that.
Right. I mean, I think that it's one of those things that I don't know what it is about Animal Kingdom, because they're geographically the largest park at Walt Disney World, but this is now the second boat ride that they've done where the biggest complaint that people have is that it's too darn short.
Yeah.
I mean, it just seems to me that that's a planning issue. And I understand a piece of it is, you know, trying to maximize throughput, because I think they were a little concerned. They wanted to make sure that they could process as many guests through the attractions in Pandora as possible. Mm-hmm. But I got to say, I mean, your description is fitting with what I'm hearing from a lot of people, which is that it's technologically stunning and very much, you know, it's a beautiful attraction to be on, but you can't justify spending the time it takes to get on it given the length of the time of the ride.
Yeah.
Which is the way that I've felt frequently about Cali River Rapids, for that matter.
Oh, sure. When we were there, it was raining, so we were able to walk on Cali Rapids twice in 20 minutes.
Right. Well, so there's kind of where my question would come back around, which is, if eventually we got to the point where the boat ride there, the river journey was, you know, a 5 to 10 minute wait, right? Walk on or nearly walk on. At that point, would it be worth it to go back? Because I think that that's the idea, is that eventually it can process enough people through that when it's not, you know, this crazy rush to check out everything in Pandora, that, you know, it should be able to be in that sort of group of Omnimover type attractions that have waiting time, you know, standard wait times of 20 minutes or less.
See, I'd be surprised by that, because the outer fringes of the wait of the queue line had those fans, you know, fans going, and it really winds away from the attraction, the line does. So they're planning on having super.
Oh, okay. Well, that's a good point.
Super long lines, or they, you know, maybe the fans aren't that tech, you know, maybe not that really expensive or whatever, but by golly, they've.
Well, or maybe movable, I guess.
Maybe. Maybe they're mounted, you know, probably 12 or 15 feet high, I suppose. But, you know, geez, maybe they got a crew that can come through there and do that in 20 minutes too. I don't know.
Yeah. No, it's a good question though. I mean, it's a good observation. I wouldn't have thought about that part. All right. Well, so that's the attractions. And you mentioned a little bit about the gift shop. Did you check out the restaurant there?
There was a huge line for it. We simply couldn't, people, of course, have been raving about some of the new stuff, but it really wasn't anything that we were queued in on, simply because we didn't want to wait any longer after we'd spent a considerable amount of time waiting in line already for attractions and things like that. But the land itself is pretty amazing. What they've done is they've used scope to influence the scale of it. So it's like you could only be maybe 20 feet from an item, but it looked like it was 2 miles away. And they've done that through a tremendous amount of the park. And at night, everything is aglow, and they've put, they must go through with like a grass seeder or something like that. And they spread like this powder that during the day it absorbs the solar energy, and then at night it glows, and it's all over the walkways. And I mean, we knew that it was like a powder or whatever because it had rained, so a lot of it had collected in certain areas, and then it would dried out, and then there'd be like little piles of it here and there. But there was still a ton of it everywhere, and it's really it's just stunningly beautiful, especially in the evenings. But in the day, to miss out on the scaling and how immense it looks for not really being that big of an area. And when we were there, you could only enter through one entrance, and you had to exit. You had to come out by the Dawa Bar, which
darn. Yeah, they were steering the crowd just because of the volume.
Yeah, yeah, yep. And they had a tremendous percussion show there where they beat on these large drums, and you know, there's little kiosks for merchandise and things like that, like just like normal. But it's really well done for a film that I, and when we talked about this years ago, I couldn't understand why they had purchased Avatar or why they had the rights for Avatar. And I thought it was to combat the Harry Potter part of Universal's parks. And now seeing that for the most part, Harry Potter is done with new material, where Avatar is just now starting to come out with new material here over the next probably decade, knowing James Cameron. But, you know, maybe it wasn't such a bad idea.
Well, I mean, it'll be interesting to see where it goes with the new content, because, you know, that is sort of the, you know, the big unknown. I think that they did they made the right choice in setting the land and the attraction elements in the land sort of in a different time frame than the movie that's already been released, right?
Mm-hmm.
Very different. They've made it, you know, well in the future, like way after that stuff is ancient history in the world of Avatar that you enter.
Yeah, they badmouth the company frequently about yeah. how they were there to mine, and they show clips of it. And there's one of those battle suits that's kind of damaged outside one of the restaurants, and you know, things like that. But yeah, they've progressed beyond that.
Right. And I think that was wise, because it really does allow it to have its own identity a little bit. But the downside is what you were saying before, that you don't have any emotional connection to it. It'll be interesting to see if, you know, now that the attractions are in place and Cameron hasn't even really started making these sequel films yet, you know, it'll be interesting to see whether they're intentionally going to drop Easter eggs into the new film or films. Because, you know, the first one, I mean, I just pulled them up, the most recent updates of projected dates for these four remaining Avatar films are 2020, 2021, and then 2024, 2025.
Jeez.
So we're really looking pretty far down the road.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, 3 years of the land being open before there's a new film.
Yep.
So, you know, is it going to be too far removed to be worth dropping Easter eggs, or is it a perfect opportunity to kind of give the land a little boost when the new movie comes out? I think it kind of remains to be seen.
Yeah. And the thing is so big, or, you know, the land part of it's not huge, but it makes me wonder, I haven't looked at it like from a satellite view, but maybe it's sort of like Epcot, where there's areas that they could include new product or new areas if they chose to.
I don't know that there's much. I believe if I'm recalling correctly, there's been some talk that there is at least one expansion pad set aside, but I don't know that there's any more than one expansion pad. And if there is, then I would imagine that whatever they, you know, did there, assuming the rest of the land continues to go well, that, you know, maybe that's what they do sort of between the 2021 release and the 2024 release, right? Somewhere in the gap.
Yeah. Yep. And I imagine, you know, they don't know what they're even dealing with, because those stories haven't been written, or at least
exactly,
you know, so maybe the best ride there hasn't been even designed yet.
That's true too. Okay. So that's kind of the highlights of the front end of the trip. But, you know, after that front end, you still had a 5-day vacation moving over to sort of your favorite, you know, resort area at Walt Disney World, right?
Yep.
Relocating your family over to Boardwalk, and sort of continuing from Boardwalk. So second half of your vacation, you know, you no longer have the younger kids that you have to worry about keeping entertained and not overwork, you know, overextending and all of that. So how does the trip change when you move over to Boardwalk?
Well, technically they were there for two more days because did come over and go swim because I wanted to make sure they went down the clown mouth slide.
Sure. We had a little bit they could puke out of the puke out of the clown.
Yeah, I thought that would be great. But we rented DVC points. And we had – now, we've stayed at the Boardwalk probably five or six times now. This was the best room location-wise we've ever had, and we may not ever be able to top this for us. You know when you're in the lobby of the Boardwalk, okay, and you walk past the concierge desk and there's a little gift shop there and there's the elevator bay? You take a right down that hallway, four doors down. That was our room, and when we opened up our deck door – we are overlooking the path that walks right to the pool.
Wow.
And it was, I mean, just completely random. We had a queen-size bed. They had the Murphy bed that came out from underneath the television for my youngest daughter, and then the pull-out couch for my oldest daughter, and a much larger bathroom area. So we were pretty impressed with that room.
Oh yeah. Well, and you were going from, you know, 100 or 260 square feet and two double beds to, you know, the king size bed for the adults and each of the kids got their own bed.
Yeah. I mean, I think it had like a 12-foot ceiling in there. It was just a huge room. And so, yeah, we were really happy with that.
Very nice. Very nice. And what were the things that you had kind of set aside to do with that second part of the trip? Was there anything that you were kind of holding back for that?
Not really. We still spent a lot of time at the Magic Kingdom. We really enjoy having the access of walking to Hollywood Studios and, of course, to Epcot. I did sneak over and have a meetup with John Peters and his wife, and we met at in the UK Pavilion, and we went inside because the outdoor stand wasn't open yet for some crazy reason at 12 o'clock in the air at noon. And so we went in and had a Guinness and I had a drink, and then we went outside and talked for a little bit. And then we had a couple Innocent Guns which I don't know if you've heard this, but I really like Innocent Gun. And so,
I think I've heard that somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah. And, so then he and his wife, which it was a really nice meeting him. He and I, you know, we're friends on Facebook, and I follow he and Jort's, their podcast and their exploits, drinking
right,
beer.
Right.
And,
the Weekly Pint.
Yep. And, well worth the listen. And so, he and his wife then went off and did their own thing. And, it was just really nice getting a chance to meet another disc dad. And then, we just enjoyed being at the Boardwalk area. And, we took time to go through World Showcase we were able to do – we had fast passes for the new Soarin', and we rode that a couple, three times, and we did Test Track, you know, the big hitters. Mission Space was closed for refurbishment, so that was a little disappointing.
Right.
But, it was just great. We really enjoy that area.
Okay. Was there any other attractions or dining that, you know, stood out in that second part of the trip that either you hadn't done before or had been refreshed or just, you know, felt fresh and positive?
You know, I'd heard people talk about the restaurant in the basement of the land. I'm sorry, I don't have very good notes here.
It's okay. You're talking about the quick service?
Yeah.
Sunshine Seasons.
Yeah, Sunshine Seasons. So we decided to go down there and give that a try, and it had one of the most unique menus that we've seen. I had a shrimp dish from their counter, and my one daughter had noodles, and the other, you know, the little kids had, you know, mac and cheese and chicken fingers and, you know, stuff like that. But it really had a very unique kind of a menu, you know, several different counters, almost like
Cosmic Rays. except that you can get any of the things from any of the windows.
Yeah. 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 So that was a nice meal. That was interesting.
All right. Excellent. All right. Well, that, were there any other, you know, experiences or shows or anything that, you know, stood out unusually on this particular trip?
The new light show, or excuse me, the new, replacement for Wishes.
Yes. Happily Ever After.
Happily Ever After at Magic Kingdom. I went in maybe a little negatively biased because I enjoyed Wishes tremendously. But when we saw this, we were towards the back of the hub. And what I didn't expect was the scope of the effects, not just on the castle, but on the new turrets and around the area. They do this thing with laser lights or something where it appears to be lightning bugs or in the trees. And it's amazing. I can't figure out how they do it, but it's just beautiful. And then the show on the castle, the projection show is amazing. It's they've got some new bits that were made specifically for this show using like the Hunchback of Notre Dame and some things from Aladdin, and it really, I'm sure there's 1,000 different versions or good copies you can watch on YouTube, of course, because everybody's filming it. But when you watch the Aladdin part of it and the little bits of kind of smartassery that the genie is throwing in there, it's almost overwhelming. It's happening so fast and it's so much. It's really, really good. And they've coordinated fireworks in with the show. You know, like with Wishes, or it wasn't really Wishes, the name of the projection show beforehand.
Right. The Celebrate the Magic.
Celebrate the Magic. How they used to have it where it looked like a rocket ship would take off from the spires of the castle. Well, now they do pieces that move on the spires, or are projected to move, and then fireworks are coordinated. So it continues to go outside of the castle and up into the sky. And it's really well done. I know that some people are diehard Wishes fans and are, you know, will still, you know, grit their teeth and stomp their feet and you kids get off my lawn because it's not Wishes, but it's really a very well done replacement.
All right. Well, yeah. And I'm really excited to see it. I think that it's just so amazing to me what they've done. And you know, the part that gets to me and I'm really trying. I mean, I've watched bits and pieces of the Happily Ever After show, but I've intentionally not tried to watch the whole thing, you know, from like YouTube videos or anything, because just from, you know, basically a somewhat similar experience with the fireworks or the Star Wars fireworks show at Hollywood Studios, these projections and the other light effects just don't come across on video. Not in anywhere near the way that you experience them firsthand.
That's 100% correct. It really is. It's so much clearer. The details on it are, you know, and for the Happily Ever After uses projections that are specifically designed for certain parts of the castle. You know, they used to just kind of use it as an easel. You know what I mean? And they're going to project the show on there. But
right.
This is,
yeah, there were a few minor exceptions. There was the rocket launch,
yep,
you know, of the tower, but they were fairly few and far between.
Yeah, but this is far different, far superior in that realm. When they do the things for the Tangled section of it, where they light the glow lanterns or the, you know, they let that go and it goes up through the different spires and they move around. It's I'm telling you, it's really well done.
All right. Great example there of, you know, one of those things worth taking the trip to go and see and making the time to see it, even if you loved Wishes. You know, sometimes the thing that comes next can be just as powerful.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. Well, I think we've come to the point where we, you know, usually kind of wrap things up. So any other sort of major highlights that I haven't asked you about from this trip?
Yes, I thought this was really, really strange. We were on the boardwalk, and the kids were taking a, my wife and kids were taking a nap. It was later in the trip, and I went down to the boardwalk, and I was going to get a drink. Now, I'd been to the Abracadabra a couple times, and I was looking for something different. And I came to a stand out along the water, and it's Joe's smoothie stand, or Joe's Smoothie Shack, I believe. And they sell a pineapple drink with rum, and it's not promoted as Dole Whip. There's no, okay. There's no stickers. There's no nothing like that that says that it's Dole Whip, but that's what it is.
Okay.
And that's, and when I asked the young lady that was working there, I said, well, this concoction here with the rum and this, I was like, is that Dole Whip? She's like, well, technically yes. And now, and this vendor, those people are—they're not Disney. They're third-party vendors, if you will. And
okay,
so I don't know if they can't use the term Dole Whip, but the cup is like, it's huge. It's like the size of like a Red Solo cup or something like that. Maybe a little bit bigger, but wow. it's huge. And they put rum on the bottom. And then they put some Dole Whip in, and then she put some rum in there, and then she put more Dole Whip in, and then coated the top of it with rum.
Ooh.
And
it's like a triple of the usual, you know, Disney Dole Whip with rum.
Yeah, and you know what? I've been a Disc Dad for a long time. I've gone to the boardwalk a lot. I've gone to Disney. I know where Dole Whips are at. I understand how it works. I'd never heard of this before.
And I haven't either.
Yeah, I think this is one of the best secrets of the boardwalk, if you will. That was, I was,
you know, remind me, say it again, where exactly did you find it?
I think it's called Joe's Smoothie Stand or Joe's Smoothie Shack.
Okay, so it's just one of those stands that's along the boardwalk, kind of along the rail there in front of the lake, right?
Yes, it's called Joe's Marvelous Margaritas, Boardwalk Joe's.
Okay, so it's not a margarita, but it's probably the best thing on the menu.
Yeah.
Is what it sounds like.
Yeah. And they had some local Florida IPAs and, you know, and cans and stuff like that, and drafts and some other stuff like that. You know, if you wanted a Mickey pretzel and some other things, but I wasn't really interested in that.
Not once you discovered the bottomless.
Oh man.
Rum Dole Whip.
That was really good. Yeah. That was well worth checking out.
Wow. All right.
And something else that we used for this trip also was the park to park transportation.
Oh yeah, the express transportation.
Yeah, the express transportation. We shelled out for that. It was worth it. It really was. There was some weights involved. There's still, I don't know. The cast members that are at the check-in stand were maybe a little confused as to when buses were coming or this type of thing, but. You know, to get from, you know, Magic Kingdom to Epcot, or from Hollywood Studios to Magic Kingdom was really, really efficient.
Yeah.
Surprised they're using full Disney transportation buses. You know, geez, we were at the most that were my family of four. And I think the most of us there ever were on a bus were eight, you know, on a full size bus. So,
yeah. Yeah, it's going to be interesting because I felt the same way. You know, I used it when we were there for DizDad's convention back in January, and it was still experimental. My you know, first reaction was, before I did it, gosh, this seems like it'd be kind of pricey with the whole family. I don't know that I'd do it. And then having experienced it, I was like, well, gee, I'd definitely pay for this, even if it was a little more expensive, just because it was so convenient. And it really does, having experienced park hopping at Walt Disney World and at Disneyland, express transportation is about as close that Walt Disney World can get to the Disneyland park hopping experience of, you know, being able to jump from one park to the other as quickly as it is getting from one end of the same park to the other.
Yeah.
And with that express transportation, it really is almost the same because it picks you up in one park and drops you off in the other park. So you're almost always closer to where you were headed anyway, right? Than if you were coming in the front gate.
Absolutely.
So, all right. So looking back then, What's going to be the enduring memory of this trip? What's going to be that you know, mental image that immediately says, Memorial Day 2017?
I'm going to be honest with you. We had everybody with us. This was kind of early in the trip, and we went into New Fantasyland back in the circus tent where you meet Goofy and Donald. And my niece and nephew, you know, they wanted to meet the characters. So it was no problem. And we posed with Goofy, and then we went over and we're waiting for Donald. Well, while we're waiting, he's got this like magician or like a crystal ball, like a turban or there with a feather in it. It fell off. And so they take Donald into the back and they're fixing his thing. Well, while they're doing that, the Goofy character comes over and starts like imitating Donald Duck. And it's really funny. I mean, he's stomping his foot, he's shaking his fist, he's shaking his ass, and he's kind of carrying on. And then Donald comes out, and I can't exactly remember what my wife said. Like they said, well, sometimes Donald likes to go back and have a cookie, like on his break or whatever. And my wife said, oh, don't you mean he'd eat a Quaker? And I mean, you know, like how kind of juvenile is that, whatever.
Right, right. I mean, dad humor stuff.
Right, yeah. And Goofy, I don't know if he'd never heard that before or that cast member had a couple of Red Bulls in him or what, but came over and was just wouldn't stop harassing Donald Duck. And then Donald would not take a picture with us. He was so – he made my wife kiss his feet. And I mean, I'm serious. He just carried on and like came over and gave me a big hug and like kept pushing her away. And then Goofy came over and got into it. I mean, this was like a 20-minute event with these two characters. And you know, there's people waiting in line behind us, but they're all laughing at this, you know, like they put on this little show.
Sure.
And the handler, the cast member that acts as Donald's handler is laughing so hard she has tears coming out of her eyes. And the photo pass lady, is trying to take pictures. She's like doubled over laughing, like holding her side at, you know, and we're just like, what in the hell is going on here? I mean, it was funny, but and my niece and nephew were just, they were laughing. They're on their knees laughing and carrying on. It was really kind of a magical thing for us with this little production. And then, you know, at the end, Donald wouldn't give Monica, my wife, wouldn't shake her hand, wouldn't give her a kiss, nothing. Just acted like the true Donald Duck, like he was really, really angry. And Goofy came over and, you know, gave her a great big hug and, you know, pretended to, you know, put his ears overhead and carry on or whatever. And then they went back to their regular, you know, their regular deal. It was just really, really fun.
Well, that sounds great, and that will definitely be a memory that sticks around for a long time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's the magic that Disney brings sometimes.
And then, you know, just to wrap things up here a bit, I like to always leave a show by giving folks who are listening who, you know, might be looking at a trip next time, right? What can they learn from your experience? So what's something that you feel like you learned from this trip that somebody who is considering a similar trip could benefit from, you know, your experience and either not make the same mistake or, you know, get to enjoy the same sort of bonus experience you did?
Well, I would say with younger kids, you know, it's, I don't think I didn't invent this, of course, but, you know, taking a pool afternoon or just getting some downtime, you know, in the afternoon, if you're going to go back for a later, you know, back to attack, you know, extra magic hours or something like that in one of the parks. But, and also I would say, if you're staying at Pop Century or at Art of Animation, don't be afraid to utilize the bridge across the little bay there or little pond or lake and check out the other resort for like their food court. In the past when we'd stayed at Pop Century, the food court really was good. This time it really was average. They didn't have a lot of the specialty offerings that they'd had before. So we found ourselves going over to Art of Animation a couple of times and utilizing their food court.
Excellent. Good advice. And again, always a pleasure to talk to you about a trip. So when, you know, you had two in close succession there, when's the next one planned? So I know when to anticipate the next trip report.
I think Monica and I are going to go to Food and Wine this fall. You know, with the annual pass, you know, which also, if you're considering that, the discounts really saved us quite a bit on dining and merchandise this trip. But by us going for the 5 days in January and then the 10 days, we have come out ahead now. And so this fall.
Yeah. So it feels like fall trip would be, you know, you're getting paid, right?
Well, you're foolish not to take advantage of it. Food and Wine is one of our favorite events. And we were here for 1 day of the Flower Garden Festival, and we did take the kids around through Epcot World Showcase and look at the different topiaries and things like that. And which is, it's really pretty and it's really enjoyable. But Food and Wine is where it's at, especially for an adults only trip. And I think that's what we're planning on burning up our annual pass with.
All right. Well, it sounds like a great plan. Thanks again for coming on the show and talking about it. And look forward to hearing about that fall trip when you get back.
Awesome. Hail Hydra.
One little spark of inspiration is at the heart of all creation. Right at the start of everything that's new, one little spark lights up for you. So glad you could come along. I am the Dream Finder. Musical notes, what delightful melodies those will make. I love these flights of fancy, searching the countryside for sounds, colors, ideas, anything that sparks the imagination. A sunbeam, that's a good one. Everything that I can collect can inspire amazing and marvelous new ideas. Never know what kind of figment you may come up with. Here's my favorite. Two tiny wings, eyes big and yellow, horns of a steer,